Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Marvin Smith, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and with me is co-host Marvin Smith. And Marvin, it's great to be back in the studio with you.
Yeah, Alan, it's always great. It seems like it's been, like, I'm going to use the word eons, like long, long, long time.
Well, the beauty of that is it means we're both busy. So
true.
But at the same time, we will always bring you this show either with one of us or with both of us.
Yes. And I love it when we're together. It just brings a whole nother flair and flavor. But, you know, one thing I noticed, too, is when you do the show independently or vice versa, we still seem to carry what we do, and we do it well. I think we carry the essence of what the spirit of the show is all about, being able to highlight our guests and let them share all the great works.
Absolutely. And as we continue to bring all of you Answers for the Family.
Well, each week, this show will bring you guests that will inspire, educate, in some cases, outright entertain you, while bringing answers and options to raising children today in a constantly changing future.
And each week, we will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more.
With each of us having over 30 years experience working with families in crisis, we've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields, and authors sharing valuable stories and helpful information who are working to keep your family and mine and yours, Alan,
absolutely,
mentally, physically, and spiritually sound. But yeah, I have a point, though.
Okay.
30 years. That's a long time. Yeah, well, you know what? That brings me to 30 years. And, oh, another happy President's Day.
Thank you, and same for you.
And I wish I had in my wallet a bunch of presidents, dead presidents in my wallet. You know, I would be maybe a little happier. But, hey, it's all good. But you talk about experience, Alan, and I just want to maybe take a moment to highlight. You know, as an international investigator, you know, you've worked with at-risk youth, and now you're doing film. You're in the film. You're a producer. You know, and as you've said, I've heard you say this, that you've been blessed to be with three occupations and be allowed to travel the world and make a positive difference in the lives of others. That is very admirable. And I you know, I've been knowing you about 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we have had a chance to look at each other's and see each other's lives. And, you know, as I think, I mean, now you're more nudging or you're more involved in the film industry. Maybe, you know, you've done, you know, you produce a developer, Bounty Wars, the series, you're part of that. You were the producer and technical advisor for three feature films, right? 2014 titled mm-hmm. 24 Hours.
Mm-hmm.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
Oh, you're
Checkmate,
right.
And Decommissioned. And so, and then you were the president, you know, since this is President's Day. You know, you have a company that you are the West Shield Adolescent Service that you have been the president now from the founder and the founder. And you were the president of the World Association of Detectives. Wow. I mean, that's a lot of good stuff. Maybe you can, you know, maybe share on West Shield and maybe kind of take us to the film industry and just for a backdrop. I think, you know, our listeners always hear us talk, but they never really get the full backdrop. And I just wanted to kind of highlight that, if that's okay.
Well, Marvin, and first of all, I appreciate you bringing this up. And I know that what has brought us together and what brought us together 30 years ago is we both have a heart for making a difference in other people. And that's what I saw in you. And when we first met, that was what I saw was here was a man who could be doing a lot of other things. I mean, you know, I've shared before. I mean, you know, former professional football player, a spiritual counselor. I mean, you work with people on so many different levels, and you know. But what I saw was that heart, you know, and working with kids. And when you first started going out on these, you know, in these cases, and you would sit down with the kid and I would see how you bonded with them and how you approached them at their level. And I knew that we were going to be doing things together for a very long time.
Yeah, well, do you know what it sounds like? You weren't, even though you weren't supposed to bring, this was, I was, highlighting you at this moment. But I mean, that, I think this is a great segue into where we're going. And as we talk about our guest today, and there's her book, Love Cycles. And I think this kind of, we think about cycles in life and ebb and flow. It brings us into this whole thing about, you know, why do we do what we do? It's about for the love of what we do, and for the love of people. And I believe, as our guest is going to share today, we talk about love cycles. Now we're talking about taking it more independently, or taking it to the point of relationships. You know, because I always think, you know, if you don't have a core, a healthy core relationship, and you're out there doing the great works, it impedes upon. It makes it tough.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it makes it tough. So I think at the core essence, we've got to go back to, you know, what is that? What is that, you know, having a mate, having a wife, and what does it mean to keeping, being happy and healthy and all those good things?
Yeah, and what message are you sending your children? So I love the fact that you talked about, you know, it's part of the love cycle. And what I have loved about this book is, what is our relationship at home? What are we projecting to our own children?
Yes.
What are they seeing? And in the same sense, now when we talk about as far as business, what are we projecting to them?
Right.
Are we going out? Are we hiring people that have the same heart? And is that the culture that we're showing these kids that we're working with? Or, you know, are we making decisions based on somebody trying to get a paycheck?
Right. You know? Yeah, and it makes a difference. I mean, I think that's a core essence of a value that you just shared, that, you know, do you hire just to, you know, put bodies and people in place, or are you trying to hire the like-minded, that spirit of the culture of what you're trying to have in place?
Right.
Which
right.
is very important.
Yeah, and in fact, and I just got back, and again, the reason I think why I wasn't, was it last week or the week before? I don't know. They're starting to run together. You know, I was
that's
in...
That's called old age, Alan. That's just called old age.
That's a whole different reason,
old
right?
age. Okay, come on, Alan. Let's call it for what it is. Oh, it's running to each other. No, it's yeah. called old age. Okay.
So, but, you know, I was in Nashville, and I was around so many incredible people that have this like mind, that yes. that has a heart for children, that has a heart for the next generation. And it's such a great feeling, but one of the things that felt the best was the people that came up to me, because I was there with Chase. I had my son with me, mm-hmm. and people that would come up and they would say, "Wow, I'm so impressed. Your son has that same heart that we believe you have, but he has that same heart for helping other people." And it was great. There were ed consultants that had spent 3 days with him.
Yes.
And they came back and could not say enough nice things about
right.
about him, and about where he's coming from, and about where they see him going, because he has this great heart for other people.
And what's good about that, you know, especially I always think about this behavioral background and people, is in you, well, first of all, we talk about legacy. It's creating a legacy, and it's being modeling, I call it behavior modeling what we want, not telling them what we want, because they're watching our behavior. And yep. I think the same thing, we start to look at love. I mean, I hear what you're saying, honey, but I'm watching what you're doing. They're two different inconsistent things. And looking at that, and as I even know Chase, we've talked, and just to think, this is where he's at today. Can you imagine 10 years from now, he stays on his beaten path, 20 years from now? Because the goal, I think, with any, as a parent, is to see our loved ones, to see our siblings, to kind of take it to a whole nother level.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what we'd like to see. And what we do, we set that foundation. So I think it brings us full circle about coming to love cycles.
Definitely. And kind of going with what you were saying, or where you started out about making a positive influence on other people, that's what this show is about. That's
yes.
why we started this show, was when we're out there working, we can make a positive influence on one person, one at a time.
Yes.
And then we looked at it and thought, you know, if we do a show like this, a radio show, if we write a book, something like that, we can make a positive difference on a larger group
yeah.
of people. And which is why, as you brought it up before, why I've taken it now to movies, because the movies that I have written for the future are set up to make a positive difference on even more people.
Yes, and we need more. Film is a great medium in looking at the internet and all these the aspects. It's a great medium for being able to put things that are out in the atmosphere, out in the world, that have this positive residue. You know, and the thing about it, there's too much negativity in our world today. And no one's, what about those good human interest stories? You know, what about, you know, talking about your faith? You know, we're not talking about somebody's faith talking about, but what about what helped shape my life? Mm-hmm. You know, and these are things that people we're getting away from. But anything that's horror, bad, negative, we want to plaster it and put it out front and center, as they say. So I commend you, and I'm just glad that I'm part of the process. And I see, you know, some continued good works in the future as we go forward.
Absolutely. And our guest, when I mentioned about writing a book as a way to reach more people, I think that our guest falls into that category too. And she is Linda Carroll, and she is the author of various books. One is called Her Mother's Daughter. Another is Remember Who You Are. And the third is the topic of our show today, Love Cycles, the Five Essential Stages of Lasting Love. Now, Linda has been a couples therapist for over 30 years, which is probably along that time where you're making a difference, you know, with people one at a time.
Yes.
You know, she is also certified in transpersonal psychology and a master teacher in pairs therapy.
Right.
She lives in Corvallis, Oregon, offers workshops across the country, and is a frequent speaker at Rancho La Puerto in Tecate, Mexico. Linda, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Well, hi. I'm so glad to be on your show. Already I'm thinking so many things about what you said. But I will wait till you ask me a question to respond, because I could just start talking and not stop, just with what the conversation has been so far.
Oh, well, I have a question, Linda. Let's start here.
Yep.
What even motivated you? Let's go back, then we can come forward. Sometimes we got to go to the beginning to get to where we're at today. What even possessed you to start going down this line of, you know, of couples therapy and you know, becoming a therapist?
Well, I had been married before, and before the marriage that I'm in now, I had done so much wrong. I had seen what I grew up with and what I saw as relationships, and kind of what my model was for love was so different than what love is. Mm-hmm. And when I committed to be with my husband, I really knew I needed to be with him for the rest of my life, and I didn't know how to do it. And that's when I began to understand that there is so much skill involved, that love is a feeling.
Yes.
And a long-term relationship is really a skill set. And I was determined to find out how to make it work. And I knew I didn't know, but that there was a roadmap somewhere. And I began to look for the roadmap. And as I began to look for it, and I began to study with everybody I could find who seemed to know something about marriage that made sense to me, eventually that roadmap was something I started to teach to other people. And as I taught it, people began to feel so hopeful. And when I was on my way to give a talk somewhere, I can't remember where, but I was going to talk about relationships, and I was reading this magazine on the airplane that was one of those sort of, you know, I used to call them a Dear Abby, you know, that someone wrote into a person.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the question was, Dear so-and-so, Dear Abby, Dear whoever it was, I have this great husband. He's a wonderful dad, and we've been together forever. We have a rich history, but I'm not in love with him anymore, and I just don't feel what I used to. What should I do? And the person who was responding wrote, you should get a good lawyer, because it's time to move on.
Ooh.
I was so horrified at that advice, and so really staggered at it. It was just such bad advice. And I began to actually talk about it when I was giving the talk the next day. And somebody said to me from the audience, what was it that really provoked you from being so upset with it? I said, you know, because I always start talks just with where I'm at. I said, love is a feeling.
Yes.
Love is a feeling, and it comes and it goes. And in a long-term relationship, people don't walk around every day totally in love with each other. They annoy each other. They're bored with each other. Some days are in a long-term marriage, there's some cold winters. Love is a feeling, and a relationship is a decision. It's a skill set. And that skill set has two kinds of skills, which I'd really love to talk about on your program especially.
Yes.
But But the first skill has to do with how we select the other person, how we begin. And I say in the introduction, I wish I'd had this book when I was a teenager. I wish that I had understood about the first stage of love, which is the merge, falling in love, that that is not that does not mean that that's necessarily the person we should be with. When we feel all those feelings that we hear about in songs and movies, the strength of those feelings for some of us really mean that we should run the other way, and that choosing a life partner is that in of itself is a skill set. And it doesn't just have to do with the feeling. It has to do with all kinds of information about who they are. And that comes from self-knowledge. So the first thing we can give our kids, really, besides how we're modeling our own life, is the real understanding that before they can fall in love with somebody and have it be right, they've got to know how to love themselves. They've got to be whole in order to be able to be in a wholehearted relationship. Otherwise, they're looking for someone to fill them up.
Okay, Linda, listen to me, Linda, listen.
I'm listening.
Hey, Linda, have you seen that it's been on the internet? It went viral. This little kid was talking to his mother. It's a little sidebar here, and I got a chuckle right now. And so the mother's talking to the little kid about, because he wants to get a cupcake, right? And the mother loves the kid, and she says no, but he wants to the grandmother, and the grandmother said he could. So he's already at a young age negotiating, figuring how to navigate. And he goes, and so the mother's talking to him. He doesn't even call her mom. He goes, Linda, we're talking about learned behavior. He goes, Linda, no, Linda, listen, Linda. Linda, I'm trying to explain. Linda, and the mother is in between talking to him, right? Linda, you're not listening to me. And I'm going, the kid was only three. So I had to chuckle because I'm
it.
Like,
I haven't seen it now.
Oh, you got to go on YouTube and see it. You will laugh. But then as a therapist, the other part is sad because what is this kid, at 3 years old, what is he mimicking? What is he seeing?
Yes, exactly.
Already something going
That's
on in a relationship.
Exactly right.
But my point I wanted to say was this. I just a little sidebar. Just listen to me, Linda. Linda, no. But you're right, Linda. Love. You mean to tell me? You got to correct me here. You mean love is not? I thought it was all about the feelings. And you're saying
that's
it's something.
Right. That's what
you're telling me
thought.
It's something
that's
different
why
than
a
feelings.
Lot of trouble in the world because it's not about the feeling. The feeling's nice, but it's about the action. It's about the actions, and it's about practicing those skills, especially on the days when you don't want to. That's what it really is about.
That's good. That is really good.
If you
want
to get good at, and what are we teaching our kids, you know? I find that there's two kinds of families that kids come from where they have big trouble in relationships. One is where everything's bad. But the other is where everything's perfect,
uh-huh.
And the parents, they're trying to do it right. But what they're modeling to those kids is that everything is perfect in this relationship. We've never had a moment of doubt or a bad day. And I think that the best thing that you can teach your kids is how to recover from bad days,
mm-hmm.
How to recover from the fact that we are not perfect. We don't live perfect lives. And, you know, sometimes I think that the best skills that kids learn is how their parents untangle some of their troubles, rather than pretend that everything's okay. Because when they pretend that everything's okay, then kids grow up, and when they find out it's not, they don't know what to do.
Right,
you know,
right.
So we've got to teach the territory of repair in our relationships over and over. Anyone in a long-term marriage knows that repair is so important.
Yes.
And that, you know, as all the great teachers say, everybody argues. We're all impossible. Everybody
okay.
is impossible.
Well, Linda,
people
but then
are
you...
incompatible, huh?
But
and it's okay. not the it's not the trouble that we have that's the problem. It's whether we recover quickly. We know how to say I'm sorry. We know how to say I forgive you. We know how to move on, and we need to teach this to our kids because when they fall into trouble, they think the whole world has come apart.
Well, what about the other? That's great. I mean, sharing that. Now, what about the other side of that, the pendulum the other way, where now everything in the relationship is just always seems to be trouble. Now the kids are watching, and they kind of they could grow up kind of shell-shocked, which really impedes upon their relationship forward, because all of a sudden, like, oh, no, I don't want Man, as soon as they see some behavior that reminds them where they come from,
that's very good.
They could be with a great, they could be with somebody that really is a good person for them, but then there's something inside of them, that internal bell going off, danger, danger, warning, warning.
That's very good. That's right. And they think, uh-oh, I know what this is going to turn out like, and off they go.
Yes.
And so it starts by having a sense of your own self. You know, it starts by being, instead of finding the right person, by being the right person. That's the first thing we have to tell our kids, what we have to teach them, is I grew up in the 50s, and everything there was about finding the right person. Well, what a setup that is, because you're doing that before you have any idea what it is to be the right person.
Right.
And that I have to feel okay with myself to start with. And then we really need to teach our kids that the feelings that they have when they fall madly in love with each other, that those feelings are delicious. They're mediated by hormones. Mm-hmm. There's brain chemistry that changes. They are not evidence that they should be with the person that they love when they're a sophomore in high school. They're evidence that they are full of the hormones of falling in love.
That's right.
And harmonial, yes.
And if they understand that, if they can understand that, they don't misdiagnose it. And, I mean, I see kids who drop out of school and they're juniors in high school to run off and marry someone. You know, that is so tragic. And because they feel so strongly. And those feelings are great. You know, and how wonderful to be in love, and it's just delicious, and I understand, now go do your chemistry homework. Because we're not going to talk about this till you get to college. You know, I think that there's like a, you know, that there's a way we have to, of course, honor that those feelings are real, but they don't mean run off with this person. They don't mean get yourself into a whole messy situation that takes you away from what you're supposed to do with your life.
Yeah, and Linda, in the merge chapter, I think you brought up a very great point when you talked about, you just mentioned about the fact of they need to figure out, you need to know yourself first. But you brought up a great point in that chapter where you talked about human beings possessing two distinct and opposite instincts.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, the desire to merge with another and the need to remain an individual. And that both are vital. So talk a little bit about how we find a balance for that.
One of my favorite quotes is, I think it's Harriet Lerner, who says the best relationships are with two people who don't have to be together to survive but choose to. Because they know that they're enough. And so what happens is you have kids just desperate, and especially if they come from families where there's not stability in love, that when they feel those feelings of feeling madly in love, those feelings take them over. These two instincts are essential, though. And that's what I mean by being the right person. You know, when I start out looking at thinking about, you know, 11, 12, 13, 14-year-olds that start to think about what they want to do with their lives, That the first part of that, it's so important to feed our kids the knowledge that their life is really about what their spirit is telling them to put into the world, not about finding someone to love. Mm-hmm. If it's about finding someone to love, something's wrong. And I work with kids a lot, and I hear them all the time, especially girls, talking about just wanting someone to love. That is so much trouble. And what I say is, you know, how about yourself?
Right.
What does it mean to love yourself? What does it mean to fulfill that dream you have of being a ballet dancer or being a teacher or working with kids that, you know, or being an emergency room doctor? That's the first thing to pay attention to. Find out where you're going and then decide who's going with you, because then you'll always have connection with yourself. But if you don't know where you're going and you go with someone, people often ask the questions in the wrong order. Where am I going and who's going with me? Question one is, where am I going? Because that's about feeding the self, the individual self. I don't believe that we are put here on this earth to be to live somebody else's life. I believe we're put here to live our own life, and we've got to figure out what that is.
I'm going to cut you off, but so the listeners, we can kind of get a little pause in here so they can, this is good stuff. This is really good. In essence, what you're saying is a person in a relationship shouldn't lose himself in the relationship, because, you know, that's what I hear a lot, you know, in relationships. Like, I've lost myself. I don't know who I am because I'm behind this person, or vice versa. Where it to me, it's like when each person has the opportunity, really knowing who they are, and they're bringing their skill sets, they're bringing who they are together into oneness, but being confident in who they are on both sides of this fence.
That's right. And that, Alan, that's exactly what.
Yeah, yes, and, go ahead. And just to add to that, Linda, from the standpoint of a question, is when you have that situation, how much of that becomes the demise of the relationship? Because when they've lost themselves, they've also lost the person that their partner fell in love with.
Isn't that what happens so
yes.
often? How often do you hear that? Is I fell in love with her because she was so strong, because she was independent, and then suddenly we have a person who forgets who they are. Now, of course, it's not so black and white as we're making it. You know,
right.
Life is it's a long story that we live, and we do lose ourselves from time to time. We lose ourselves with kids. We lose ourselves with work. But do we have the roadmap to find ourselves again? That's really the question. And if we've never done it, we don't know how to do it. We don't know how to do it when we lose our way. There are times you really do lose yourself, you know, and I think that there's a lot of myths out there about marriage. You know, one of the things that I thought was staggering in Daniel Gilbert's book, Stumbling on Happiness, he does this chart of marital happiness. And what he says in that book is that marital happiness actually decreases at the birth of the first baby. Not increases, but decreases.
Wow.
Because the mom's focused on the baby,
uh-huh.
and the mom has all these chemicals going on in her body that are making her focus on the baby, and the relationship is not getting nurtured and fed. We have to know how to manage those kinds of times in a relationship from a place of wholeness and well-being in ourselves to navigate through them. And if we don't, if we're all about each other, then who takes care of the kids? How can we move apart to do the things we have to do with family and career and keep re-nurturing the relationship and grow it back if we are so vulnerable to losing that high, that incredible feeling that when we start to lose it, we think something's wrong and react to that? You've got to have some wholeness in you to be able to know what to do.
And
those inevitable things happen.
And what it sounds like is that how do we find multiple sources of providing 100% of what we have to give with multiple people? So it sounds like what you're saying is that when they have a child, now that love that was being given is being split. So you have each parent feeling like, you know, they're only getting a portion of what they were getting before, which can probably work against you then with the second, the third child, or a you know, a business, you know, that's now being started for an entrepreneur as you're starting a new business. You know, if it takes away, so the question I guess is, how do we provide 100% of what we have to give to multiple sources without completely losing everything we have?
I don't think we do. I don't think we can provide 100%. But I think what we can do is we can model to our kids, hey, this is kind of hard. You know, we've got a new baby, and, you know, I'm trying to work at my business, and I know there's not a lot of extra right now, honey. I know it's frustrating. But what we're going to do is we're going to take some time next week. I remember one time when I was in graduate school and learning something, and, you know, it was amazing because it actually worked. And what I learned was that it was some sort of program for people in graduate school like 30 plus years ago, is that if you're working and as a mom and your kids are, you know, your kids are going to be needy, especially if they're young, one of the things that you can do is give them a focus time, 2 hours once a week just for them. And that actually can solve a multitude of problems. And I began to do that with my kids. It was like, okay, this hour is for you. What do you want to do with it? It's just for us. That's what I'm talking about with skill. You know, we can't be everything to everybody, and there are times which really take our attention away from kids. And kids can learn to manage that. I think that's part of good health, is that it's not always wonderful all the time, and having resilience for what to do when there's harder times. But we've got to talk to our kids. We've got to show them a roadmap for what to do. We've got to let them express their protest. You know, when there's something going on in the family that's taking a lot of time. You know, if let's say you have a sick child, and we have to give our other children a chance to say, "This isn't fair. I'm losing attention right now," and to be able to say, "You're right. It's not fair. How do we handle things that aren't fair as a family? Let's talk about that," rather than trying to make it right and perfect all the time. We need imperfection in our lives to show our kids that it's okay when everything doesn't go right.
Well, as you share that, two things. And we are at that time of the show, too. We're going to be coming up to a commercial break. But I want to share something real quick. And what I like to do, if Alan, you're in agreement, there's some great, some really good stuff in your book. And I like to get more into the details of the book because our listeners need to hear about handling healthy arguments. You know, what are the love cycles? I mean, there's some really good meat in your book that I would like to get to. And matter of fact, we could talk maybe for another 3 hours and still scratch the surface. This is such a good subject. It is. Now, what you were saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, what I'm hearing in my mind as you're talking is being able to come back and have healthy communication, being able to communicate through the process, and that communication becomes key. And I really believe that resiliency, how do you build resiliency? And I learned this when I play in sports. If you're not going through the hardships, you can't grow. We could talk about it all day long. You know, it's like going into the gym. It's like, you know, got to go work out. I can think about it all day long. I can communicate it. But until I get in there and do it,
It doesn't.
I even heard people share, "Yeah, Marvin, it's like this." And they go, "Yeah, okay, I got it. Until I went through it, and I go, "Oh my gosh." But I think even as a parent, I talk to my wife a lot. Sometimes when our kids are going through these hard places, the wife being very nurturing, very loving, I am too. But on the other hand, it's like, we got to let them go through it. How are they going to learn?
We've got to let them go through it. And we've got to model how to go through it ourselves.
Yes.
So that they
yes.
don't see us as not ever having our own challenges. And I'm not saying you should bring your kids into everything that goes on, but they do live with you.
Yes.
So they know a lot that goes on. And so many things that can be real life lessons if we let them be, if we bring our kids into it.
Yes.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break. I want everybody to stay with us because when we come back, we're going to talk about some more of those love cycles. And also, Linda, if you could, you know, at the end of your Love Cycles book, you have a quiz that's to determine what love cycle each person is in. So when we come back, I'd like if you could share a couple of questions from each category to sort of help all of us that are listening maybe better gauge where we're at in our own love cycles. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you. And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. And our guest today is Linda Carroll. And the book we're talking about is Love Cycles, The Five Essential Stages of Lasting Love. So, Linda, when we went to break, I talked a little bit about some of the questions that you have. But can you sort of go through and just share and just say, here's the first of the five love stages. And maybe here's a couple of questions that would allow us as listeners to think and go, am I at that one? And then maybe jump to the next one so people can kind of get a feeling, where am I in this whole system?
Okay, but I want to say something about what you just said about runaways, and then we're going to do that. And that is that when what happens when kids run away, it's a desperate move because nothing's working. And what they need are life skills most of all when they're found. So they don't run away again. They know something different to do. And what you're doing is just so profound. You know, your work is so profound. And who are the kids that get caught into real trouble when they run away? They're kids that don't have a sense of their own self. So they're vulnerable to somebody coming up to them and saying, hey, I'm going to take care of you. And that is, and so anyway, I want to just say what brilliant work you're doing. What we know about the merge is that it is mediated by chemicals, that the brain changes. I did this at 11 years old, I fell in love. How intelligent do you have to be? How many skills do you have to have? It's called falling. It takes nothing. It just takes meeting someone, being at the right moment of vulnerability, and all these feelings start getting downloaded. Your brain changes, and you know the part of the brain that they've done lots of research on. What happens when you fall in love the first time is the part of the brain lights up, because they do PET scans with people that are in romantic love. The part of the brain lights up
like a Christmas tree
with gambling and chocolate.
Yes.
It's a dopamine hit. It's addiction. And it's not bad, but it's not a good sign to marry someone. So that's the first thing. If we can teach our kids, if we can teach them, this is going to happen to you, and it's an amazing experience, but it doesn't mean you're supposed to marry that person. It just means enjoy it and do your homework. Then it's not such a blow-away experience for them. But if we don't teach them that, they don't know what to do with it because it feels like a miracle. And certainly love is a miracle, but real love. Okay, so what happens? That lasts 3 years the first time, about 2 years. It has diminishing returns every time we fall in love. And then what happens is that some of those things we fell in love with start to annoy us. All those ways we felt so compatible, we begin to realize we're not. You know, in that first stage, we reach out and people who sit on the couch and play video games go skiing, and skiers play video games, and people we do all kinds of stretching because we want to be with the other person. But then we go back to the couch or back to the slopes, and we think, well, what was this all about, really? We begin to doubt. Sooner or later, what happens is we start to miss ourselves, our friends. And that sense that we are, this is part of that solitude, togetherness, and that's a normal stage. There's nothing wrong with it. We have to do that. But because we have so much of our culture that makes love about that first stage, people think something's wrong, and they think, uh-oh, we're different. Of course you're different. You know, we don't fall in love with our clone. So if we understand that as part of the roadmap, then we know what to do. We have to keep, for one thing, now we start needing the skills, rituals of connection, taking time aside. I have 6 essential skills in the book, and keeping your own tank filled is one of the skills. And another one is nurturing the relationship, even when you don't feel like it. You know, my husband has brought me a latte every morning for 30 years. And sometimes he brings that latte with a big old smile. Sometimes he's serious, trying to get to work. He just hands it to me. Sometimes he's sort of mad at me, and he even at times has put it on his side of the bed, so I have to reach over and get it because it's sort of a mean latte. But every morning that latte comes, that's an essential nourishing skill. And he does it no matter what is going on, whether we're mad at each other or madly in love. Those are the rituals that feed our connection and love. And so I have a lot about that in the book.
Well, and that's
one of them.
And
yes.
Linda, on that subject, we have a message that has come in to us that I believe is right, kind of hits right there, where it says, how do we break the cycle of falling in love and feeling after a while, the more I give of myself in time, love, and support, the less I get in return, and trying to balance it doesn't seem to work?
That's a very big question. The more I give, the less I get. I would say 2 things. I would say the first thing is, what are you giving to yourself?
Yes.
Where is yourself in this? How are you nurturing your own soul, your own heart? And if you're just totally focused, so that there's this balance here, you know, I need to give to me, but I also need, I need to give to you, but it needs to come out of strength and wholeness, not neediness. So I would say that this is a person who may be trying to change somebody, trying to maybe get somebody to be a certain way with what they're doing for them, rather than, and loving doesn't come out of a need to change. It comes out of a need to, really, out of the need to give. But I think that there's another part about this is that I question, I mean, I don't know, she's feeling like she, or I'm assuming it's a woman, is giving more than she's getting back. Maybe there's a conversation that also needs to happen, you know, and that needs skill. That needs a lot of skill. And so maybe seeing somebody that can sit with you and help you talk about that with your partner would be important, because the handmaiden of doing, and not getting fed back is resentment. And right. then that becomes another kind of problem. So... How's that? What do you think?
No, I think you nailed it. And again, we want to thank everybody that takes the time. If you either call in or you send us an email, or if it's a
instant
message, whatever it is, we appreciate you taking the time. And we know that because this is in the middle of the day, we sometimes get the emails that come in prior to the show, because they've gotten the press release, they just want to get it asked. And we have another one of those that's kind of along the same lines. And this one says, everyone talks about the 7 to 10 year transition when couples seem to grow apart and are no longer happy together, and divorce is typically the outcome. Then there is the other group who have been married 20 years and are just going through the motions. It's not bad or good, it's just comfortable. Does your book address how to recover the friendship, respect, and loving relationship
yes.
that both
yes,
groups have lost?
I want to add to that, Linda. I want to add one point. That's a park right there. Now, I was reading, and it goes, you know, it ties in the notion of passion peters out. You know, the 7 year, you know, we always hear the 7 year itch.
Right.
The honeymoon is over. The reality sets in. Where's the truth in all of this? You know, but and correct me if I'm wrong again, but from what I kind of going through the excerpts in Love Cycles, the 5 essential stages of lasting love, it promises that long-term, wholehearted love is still possible. Now speaking to it, Linda.
Well, you know, when I had a couple come to me, they lived back east. They came for a 2-day intensive, and they were at the end. I'm gonna give you an answer to this. They came into my office and they wouldn't look at each other. They both sat with their arms folded, turned away from each other, and they said, "This is it. This is the last thing we're gonna do." And they were so angry and so filled with their years of distress with each other that they couldn't talk. And I thought, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? They've come all the way from New York. What am I, you know, here they are. And then I had this inspiration, and I said to them, I don't want to hear what's wrong. I want you to tell me about the beginning of your relationship when you first fell in love and what that was like. And within 15 minutes, they were laughing. They were talking about when they met. They were talking about what they first saw in each other. And there are so, and then we had this beautiful 2 days, because what happens often when people get into the 7 year itch or the, you know, desire discrepancy, which is where one person has high libido, one has low, which is the most common problem couples have, and they don't know what to do with it. But it's not really a problem if you know what to do with it. What happens is they start to move away and become either indifferent or resentful, and they forget all the things that were so good and rich. And
yes.
I had this couple start to remember them, and all of a sudden it broke the spell. They were in like a trance with each other. And when they started to remember what was good, they started to see each other. And then the woman looked up and she said, "I've really missed you," and started to cry, and he moved over to her and put his arm around her. It was so beautiful. And that came because they were recalling what worked. Now, I think you have to talk about what doesn't work, but also we can err so much on talking about what doesn't work all the time that we forget to feed and nurture what does work and what the relationship is. And that's part of what happens when we get into love cycles. The third one, disillusionment, which is the hardest part, where we're just locked in. The first one is this trance about everything being right. But the third cycle is when we become disenchanted and everything is wrong. It's another kind of spell. And so breaking out of that means one of the things I have people do, for example, is find a photograph of their partner as a little kid that they really love, a photograph they love, and look at it often and carry it around. And that can often open their heart, soften their heart to each other. Getting educated about, we talk about the passion, you know, people have different libidos. Some people have high testosterone. Most men have about 10 times more testosterone than women, and testosterone fuels our desire. Now, that's not always true, but it's true more often. And then if you put in a birth of a baby, which changes a woman's desire level, then you have two people who think about sex very differently, often one who's thinking about it all the time, and often the other who isn't thinking about it at all. And that's, I know this sounds crazy, but it's not a problem if they know how to navigate it. But what happens is there's often so many hard moves that they make a mess in trying to work it out rather than figuring out how to navigate it in a fair and loving way.
And
so
Linda,
really we're talking about skills, again,
yes,
for how to deal with these seven-year itches or these times where we are not in love. What do we do then? We learn what to do then because there's a whole roadmap that gets us through.
And the same thing too, Linda, as I think about, you know, on the early stages of a relationship, and then on the later stages when you start talking about menopausal, you're still looking at those indifferences and hormones, and that becomes tricky as well.
The tricky part about it, though, isn't the differences. The tricky part is we make a story up. The person with the high level of desire says, oh, I wonder what's wrong. You don't want me anymore. And then they feel bad. And the person with the low level says, well, it's because you don't give me any attention. None of that is true. If they can start and read together, I'm all for that. Or we have wonderful TED Talks now, or programs like yours, where you can get educated together. What do we do when my libido is so low, it could live under a rock and have room, and yours is so high that you can think about sex going to the laundromat. What do we do to make our marriage rich?
Yes.
Well, there's a whole process and a roadmap that comes out of goodwill and care for each other. But if we don't know it, we're not going to do it. We're just going to react all the time.
Well, on the other hand, I look at, you know, sharing what you just said. That leads me into thinking, well, then how do you, because a lot of this stuff can lead to arguments.
Yes.
But then again, here we go again, getting backed into the corner. How do we, you talk about healthy arguments. How do we have a healthy argument?
Is there such a thing as
a healthy argument?
Yeah, and I was going to say, it's a great question. We've got about 3 minutes, and I wish we had more time.
Wow, the time flies.
Well, I talk a lot about that, and when I talk about the skills. But healthy argument, we need two kinds of skills. We need the skill of communication tools, and we also need the skills that the wisdom traditions talk about, generosity, acceptance, forgiveness, those kinds of things over and over and over again. But, you know, I think that you have a healthy argument when you make room for the other person, where your communication is not about winning or getting your way, but really trying to hear what it's like for them. Two people doing that, and the argument will change into a real connection.
Good point. That's a good point.
Yeah, and, you know, along those lines, as I mentioned in the introduction, you know, you do pairs therapy. I mean, that seems like the perfect fit. So for those people that can't, that can't seem to get to those questions that allow them to have a good argument or
yes,
a good form of communication in that argument, it seems like pairs therapy may be the answer for them as well.
Well, it's actually psychoeducation, and there are programs everywhere, in churches, in community colleges. So many people do all kinds of communication skills training, and that's part of it. And you can just look, go online and look that up and find out, you know, we had to do training for our profession. We do training for our computers. Why don't we do training for the most important thing in our life, which is our relationship?
Yes.
So communication training, I think it's something we should do in the seventh grade, and sadly, yeah, most of us don't, but certainly learning it. I have had more couples turn their relationship around in a weekend class. less than through 2 years of therapy. And I'm a therapist, so I believe in therapy. But most of the time what I see are couples lack the skills. There's nothing wrong with them. They just don't know how to say that they're upset about something without attacking the other person. Once they learn how to do that, everything changes.
Well, it's like you said, too, Linda, it's like twofold. It's a, you know, you can go to therapy, but then again, you walk away without the skills. I mean, you have a short-term immersion, and you're dealing with the issues, but then it's like going to me, it's going to a conference. I go back to the office, and all that great stuff I just learned, it was so feeling, it felt good. Now reality sets in again. So without the skill sets, it makes it very difficult, even going through the therapy.
That's right. But the skill set is just like, you know, it's like we were talking about going to the gym. You don't feel like you want to do it, but you do it anyway, and you get better and better at basketball.
Right.
It's the same thing with this. You practice the skills, and you don't feel like it because you really want to tell your partner off and, you know, show how hurt you are, but you stay with the skills, and after a while, those skills take over, and you actually don't end up blowing each other away when you're upset. You know how to talk about it in a way that doesn't do harm. And that's what we're teaching our kids. And that's what we need to teach our kids. When people take my classes, they say, my gosh, my whole family has changed. I thought this was for my marriage. My kids are learning so much from this.
Yes. And you know what? I cannot believe this is, we could go on and on, but we have just come to the end of the show. And Alan?
Well, what I was going to say is that for anybody, first of all, you know, if I recommend the book, I am reading the book myself right now. Go to www.lovecycles.org. Linda, thank you so much.
Yes, Linda.
You know, I would love to have you on again. There is so much great information in this.
Love to come on again. We just started, didn't we?
That's right. Yes. And for any of you out there, if you're driving, if you couldn't write down that website, go to Answers, the numeral 4, The Family. We will have it on our site so that you can get the information you need so that you can help take yourself in a positive way through the love cycles.
Yes.
Thank you. For everybody, tune in again with us on Answers for the Family. Bye now.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Marvin Smith right here on LA Talk Radio.